You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and now we're looking at bills Representative Amy Loudenbeck has taken an active lead on, including access to telehealth services for Medicaid patients and a new model for ambulance care teams in responding to a 911 call. But first, we look at a bill Governor Evers signed into law last month that allows 17-year-olds to check themselves into a shelter. What do you think about minors seeking shelter without parental permission? And on telehealth, do you have difficulty accessing health care where you live? Would telehealth services benefit you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Amy Loudenbeck is a Republican representative from Clinton, and her 31st Assembly District includes Rock and Walworth counties. Representative Loudenbeck, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you.
So let's look at this new law that was recently signed by the governor, giving homeless minors the opportunity to seek shelter without parental approval. You had introduced this bill much earlier this year. What difference do you see it making on youth who are homeless?
I see this bill as targeting youth, youth who are unaccompanied, so they're living not with their parent or guardian. And at that 17-year-old age, we really want to make sure that they finish school and that they have some support that they need. At that point, the foster care system is probably not an appropriate route for them. And so just getting them into a shelter, even if it's an adult shelter, will help them to not be vulnerable and avoid those negative outcomes.
What does homelessness among youth, what does that look like in your area of the state, your district?
Well, it's been highlighted. Beloit School District actually has a homeless liaison. They've been really active in documenting their homeless populations, but we are seeing this across the state. It's something that DPI tracks. Every school under the McKinney-Vento Act has a homeless liaison, and so we are aware that these students exist. There is a very clear process for determining if they're homeless and unaccompanied, and using that mechanism, we can make sure that, you know, there's not a parent involved and there's not a conflict in the home that can be reconciled elsewhere. This is something where the parent's incarcerated, they are otherwise absent from the child's life, and there are not other things in place to make sure that they have those supports. And so we've seen with the opioid epidemic and other things that this has ballooned into other areas of the state, but it does exist in Rock and Walworth counties and around the state.
Let's look now at the Minority Teacher Loan Program. You authored a bill that was signed by the governor last month that would expand this program. It's aimed at getting more teachers in schools where there are many children of color. What does this law change? What does it do?
It expands the eligibility. So under prior law, only schools that were located within the city of Milwaukee, only teachers that were employed in those school districts would be eligible for the loan repayment program. Now about 16 more schools, including Beloit and Delavan Darien in my district, and school districts in Arcadia and in other urban parts of the area of the state and rural both, would be able to offer that as a loan repayment program for their recruited teachers. Any school district that has 40% or higher minority population. So Madison would be another one that was included.
So a teacher is eligible to receive loans or have a portion of their college loan debt forgiven under
Correct.
This new law?
Yes, and it's something that we've worked with schools of education and with the Higher Education AIDS Board. It's something that education students need to be looking at when they're in school, and so they would take out the loan, and at that time they would make that commitment, where now they have the flexibility to teach at lots of schools across Wisconsin instead of just in Milwaukee, because there were only one or two that took advantage of the program as it previously existed. We're hoping that now, by opening it up, more teachers will make that commitment. And at the end of the day, the outcome that we're hoping for is closing the achievement gap, because that is what the research and the data for Wisconsin indicates, that having a minority teacher in the classroom helps close the achievement gap.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with State Representative Amy Loudenbeck, whose district includes parts of Rock and Walworth counties in south central Wisconsin. You can join in. What do you think about accessing health care remotely, like through a computer? Could telehealth help you? Or do you think seeing a doctor in person is better? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Representative, Governor Evers signed a bill you authored that will allow ambulance providers and suppliers to apply for this federal pilot program called Emergency Triage, Treat, and Transport. What does this program do?
Well, it's a voluntary program that is sponsored by CMS at the federal level, and it's a pilot payment program. I think it's really innovative, and I think that the data that they get is going to really help inform our decisions of what emergency services, emergency health services are going to look like in the future. So right now, if the ambulance comes and picks me up and I'm a diabetic, unless they take me to the emergency room, they don't get paid. If they come in and give me insulin and cook me a meal and make sure that I'm stable, they can do all of that, but Medicare is not going to pay for it. And so it's really important that we look at alternative payment models that avoid that highest cost option of the ER. Maybe I just need to go to my primary care doctor. What the ET3, the triage, treat, and transport, it starts right when you call dispatch. So it's not like people are just on the fly making decisions when they get to see me in my home or wherever I am where the call comes through. They're already working with the medical director, they're working with the dispatcher, and they're coming up with an alternate care plan, but they know that they're at least going to get, they will be reimbursed for it, where before they were just absorbing those costs, even if that was the best outcome for the patient.
Do we see this model working elsewhere? What have we seen out of it?
It is just starting.
Okay.
So what our bill did was enable departments to work out. You have to have a plan where you are coordinating with alternate lower acuity locations to transport, working with your dispatch. But what the feds are looking at is looking at rural and urban, small and large populations, what it's going to look like across the country to try to figure out if this is actually going to lower overall care costs and improve outcomes. And so we want Wisconsin to be part of the pilot so we can help inform those decisions.
Well, sticking to the issue of health care, there was the bill signed last week expanding Medicaid reimbursement for telehealth services. And so this delivers health care to patients via computer or tablet or smartphone. How do you see this changing health care access, especially in rural parts of our state?
Well, I think it will provide options for people, whether it's because you have everyone in the family is working and normal office hours don't work for you, or you don't have a specialist right in your community, where they're going to be able to access more providers on a time frame that works for them. Telehealth is also other things. It can be remote patient monitoring and other things that you would think about, like, say, after a stroke, if you're actually receiving and giving data that you are on a monitor of some sort. But if it's just a check-in for an appointment or taking a photo of a rash or something like that, that's something that you can maybe avoid that appointment, where make sure that you are making that appointment because you didn't have a flat tire or your kid got sick or you couldn't get there or get a ride. So we know that, especially in rural parts of the state, that people travel far. We are also paying for non-emergency medical transport, where if we can avoid some of those costs and make sure people are getting quality care in the time and setting that works for them, we're going to have better health care outcomes again. And I think that's going to help across the state.
But we're also having big issues with broadband in rural parts of Wisconsin. Could that have a limiting effect here?
Well, let's say, for example, and I know I'm not in a rural county, but I don't have perfect broadband either. So let's say that you had a young person, a minor, that needed counseling. Obviously, I have my heart's in what do we do with youth that are vulnerable. And so one of the reasons that I got involved in this was visiting with my county, talking about kids on Badger Care that need mental health specialty services. And frequently they have to go to Madison or Milwaukee to see those specialists. In this case, that youth could just go to Elkhorn. They could go to the county center and receive that counseling in a private setting where maybe they weren't getting it in their home, but they were getting it in a place that was appropriate that didn't involve them to travel over an hour during the day when they needed to be in school or their parents needed to be at work. So there could be an intermediate setting where this could be arranged so that people could see a specialist. Just like if you're in the ER in a rural setting, they can get you with a specialist on a screen right now, and so you can be connected with Children's Hospital in Milwaukee, and you can be at a remote facility in Baraboo.
Yeah. How does the bill align with state Republicans who oppose expanding Medicaid eligibility?
So there are no new populations that are going to be served by the bill. It's just making sure that the populations that we have committed to taking care of are getting quality care and that we can provide it, again, in an appropriate means for them to get it. But also, at the end of the day, the cost factor in this bill is going to be neutral, if not lower, because the people are actually going to be getting those follow-up appointments and taking care of themselves in a more consistent manner. And so we're hoping that's going to lower those acute costs and kind of level things off so that people are more stable users of the healthcare system. So it's not really new services. It's just allowing them to access services they're already eligible to get. It's just in an alternative way.
We're talking with State Representative Amy Loudenbeck of Clinton, whose district is in the South Central part of the state. And you can join in. Do you live in Beloit or Elkhorn or Delavan? What issues matter most to you? What should lawmakers focus their attention on? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. There's more State Cap to come in just a moment with Representative Amy Loudenbeck right here on the Ideas Network. Here with us for the State Capitol Report on a Monday, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Representative Amy Loudenbeck on the line as we look at pressing issues facing lawmakers at the Capitol. We'll get her thoughts on the future of gun safety legislation. Last month, Governor Evers ordered a special session of the legislature on gun control, and that respective sessions of the Assembly and Senate lasted less than a minute. Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz said, quote, "We are better than just inaction on these issues." So how do you want lawmakers to act on gun control legislation? Do you want an up or down vote? Join in 800-642-1234. Republican Representative Amy Loudenbeck stays with us. So, Representative, let's talk about the gun control special session for a moment, discussing universal background checks, red flag laws that were part of the special session. Republicans, as you know, gaveled in, gaveled out. If these laws aren't the answer, how should we go forward on the rights of gun owners and addressing public safety concerns around firearms?
Well, I think we are going forward on those issues. I heard your commentary during the break. Indeed, the special session portion of our session, our floor session that day, was brief, but we spent hours and hours talking about mental health, talking about firearm violence, talking about what we could do in Wisconsin to look at suicide prevention and other legislation that was before us, and we took significant action on those bills. I think it's important to remember that we have other laws on the books in Wisconsin that would not accomplish exactly what the red flag law would do, but would allow for law enforcement to look into someone that was potentially a threat and work with that person if somebody had a domestic violence order on them. We already have mechanisms in place for law enforcement to go in and take custody of those firearms. So I think that it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, and what we have in Wisconsin seems to be working, and we're always looking at what we can do to make our law stronger while still protecting people's Second Amendment rights.
Well, let's look for a moment on a bill that you co-authored that would train gun shop owners to recognize the signs of suicide. They then would avoid selling or renting a firearm to that person. This also puts gun shop owners at risk. Why address the issue in this manner?
Well, I think that, for one, it's a voluntary program. And so if I were an employee in a gun shop and I wanted to receive that kind of training, or if I owned one and I wanted my employees to receive that kind of training, that would provide a means to do that. It's not mandatory, but certainly I think that there needs to be I think there needs to be responsibility along the entire supply chain, not just at the point of purchase, but that's one way that we're doing it. But let's remember, last session and the session before, we looked at bills and we passed bills that talk about straw purchasers, people that are buying firearms for felons, and we know this is happening in Wisconsin, and we are saying that is absolutely not allowed. There's going to be stiff penalties for that. So firearms are not getting into the hands of the wrong people. And it seems like over and over again when we see crimes in the paper or otherwise, it's felons possessing firearms that are not allowed to do it under current law, and we want to make sure that we're addressing those issues again, but without compromising other people's rights.
We're talking with Representative Amy Loudenbeck, and you've aligned to her on the State Capitol Report, 800-642-1234. Let's look for a moment at partial vetoes. Republicans in the legislature, including yourself, are working on this joint resolution that would prevent Governor Evers from using his veto pen to increase spending in the state budget. Past governors of both parties have had this power for a long time. Why consider this option now, and what do you want to do here?
Well, I think that we've not seen this type of veto. We already know that if there's a $10 million appropriation in a bill, that the governor can lower it, but the governor cannot increase it. So they can cross out 10 and they can put in 3, but they can't cross out the 1 and put in a 2. You can't increase spending with a veto. What the governor did was he used a different mechanism in as far as deleting undeleted language and creating a different sort of formula for how much money was being appropriated, and that's something new that we haven't seen. And if we look at changing it, we'll go through the normal process of the constitutional amendment, and I think that that's a reasonable discussion to have. It's just, I mean, as these vetoes get more and more creative, we need to look back at what was the intent when we said you can't raise spending through a veto, and look at if that matches up or not, and if that's what the public wants.
Would a two-thirds override be still, you know, something that you could support if you don't get this type of resolution? I mean, would a two-thirds override make an impact?
Well, the two-thirds override would still be an option. Is that what you were saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the two-thirds override, but in the case of, I mean, there were 72 vetoes or however many vetoes. This is one that we think that under our understanding of current law that you can't increase spending with a veto. And so we're going to look at the technical language for that and see if that meets the intent. You could certainly still go to a two-thirds override vote.
Well, let's take a call now. Patty joining us from Birchwood. Hi, Patty.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to say that I am I'm very concerned about the politicization of all of the issues that we're dealing with today. Gun control, I support red flag laws and limiting assault rifles and this kind of thing. I do not say that we should take away all guns. And nobody that I know that supports reasonable gun control advocates that nobody should have guns. And I think it's embarrassing and a sham that the Republican Party won't allow a vote on these things. She says, oh, we met for hours and hours. Yeah, well, you need to do the vote in front of the people so we know what our elected officials, how they are voting and what they are doing. I want the politics to stop and the partisan bickering to stop. And I want compromise and I want real leadership as Americans, not as Democrats, not as Republicans, but as Americans first, taking care of our youth and our mentally ill and vulnerable population.
Patty, thanks for the call. Representative Loudenbeck, she wants an up or down vote here on the issue of gun safety legislation.
Well, as I also heard her say, she wants it to be non-politicized. And I would argue that what the governor has put in front of us for an up or down vote is very extreme. If he came to us with some of these things that are kind of already in the middle that we are supporting, we'd be happy to support them. And those are the things that we're going to vote on. We're not going to, I think, choosing something that is so far to the left and expecting us to just move our position, that's politicizing it. We're focusing on the politics. We're focusing on the policy, and I think that Governor Evers and the Democrats are focusing on the politics.
Well, very quickly before we have to leave you, Beloit plans to build a 1 million square foot distribution center. A review board recently approved the site plan. What will this facility mean for jobs and the local economy?
Well, it's very exciting. We're still getting the details, but they have started doing the site work. It's something that we've seen Amazon move forward quickly in Oak Creek and in Pleasant Prairie, and I think the same is going to be the case for Beloit. We've got a workforce. One thing I am particularly excited about, they're adding a transit stop at their facility, which is something that we've been talking about for the Gateway for a number of years. And so the ability to get workers from across the city and even into Janesville and other parts of the JTS route is going to be really meaningful. A lot of times, you know, we have the workers, but there's that disconnect of how they can get to work. This is going to be a plant that's going to be operating 24/7. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be needed to keep it up and running. And I think that there's general enthusiasm for that project.
Representative Loudenbeck, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate. I appreciate it.
Amy Loudenbeck is a Republican representative from Clinton, and she represents the state's 31st Assembly District. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.